Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
Very pleased now to bring in Kate Scott, who put together an outstanding signature call on the Joel Embiid play. Welcome, Kate. Great to have you back.
Oh, Steve, it's great to be back. Happy Friday to you and everyone tuning in today.
And Matt, just so you know, I can't hear Kate.
Can you hear me now?
Great to have you with us as well, Kate. On a night where the Sixers, you know, are in a playoff game on the road and aren't playing maybe their best basketball, what does it say about what they have as a team that still allowed them to win that game when it wasn't the best game?
Yeah, definitely. Can you hear me now, Steve? That is the question before
yes.
I start into this answer. Okay, fantastic. Yeah, I thought it was a huge statement game because of that fact, because of the fact that they had no business even pushing that game to overtime, let alone winning it, Steve. As I'm sure everybody watching knows, the ones that stood out to me, they had 24 turnovers that led to 27 Raptors points. They were minus 16 in points off of turnovers. They didn't have their first lead until overtime. They never led in regulation. The fact that Joel had only 5 points at halftime, I mean, I could keep going. The fact that Harden fouled out, even though he had a great first 3 quarters. This team, it seems to me, again, I've only been here for about the past, 7 or 8 months now, but from everybody who's been here for a long time, they have said teams of the past wouldn't have been able to be that resilient within a ball game. Might have been able to bounce back in the next game, but everybody who's been around this team for a while, that is what stood out the most to them, obviously, other than Joel's game-winning shot, but just the fight that this team had to rally from 17 down in a really loud, unwelcoming arena that is Scotiabank Arena. We all heard how loud it was the other night. So I was really impressed by that, and hearing everybody else be impressed by it almost pushed me to be more impressed, if that makes any sense at all.
It makes complete sense. As you've watched the season evolve, what has allowed Tyrese Maxey to become a better and better player, in your opinion, Kate?
Yeah, I think he's finally following the advice that Joel gave him early in the season. Keep shooting. Be more aggressive. We need you to be the guy that we know that you can be. I was watching back some old press conferences from December, and that's when he was asking for that. And since then, Tyrese has continued to put in the work, just like he did last year when he wasn't playing that much. And now, obviously, he is a massive part of this offense. But I think it's a credit to him, the work that he's put in, and then just kind of playing free. We know that takes athletes sometimes a while to do, especially when you're a young player like Tyrese. It's easier to say than to actually do. But I think now with James in the fold, the fact that he's such a different player, and when they're out there on the floor at the same time, I mean, if you're trying to defend the guards for the Sixers, you've got a guy who's trying to lull you to sleep and another guy who's one of the fastest in the NBA. So I don't know how you defend that. I'm glad I just have to talk about it and not do the defending.
Right. Oh, believe me, I feel that every single game. I'm glad I don't have to do it.
Well, right?
I'm glad I just have to talk about it. The James Harden has been able to get himself integrated into this. And again, this is from 30,000 feet. I just feel like there's more to give on his part. Am I wrong about that, or how do you look at it?
No, I think that James himself would agree with you on that fact, Steve. I think it's easy to forget, because of all the accolades that he had coming into Philly, that it takes a while for a guy to figure out his fit with a team. So I think the fact that he didn't start playing until the end of February, and now we're just the middle of April, and they are already playing as well as they have at the start of this postseason, I think he would agree. I agree with you. I think Doc and company would agree. He is just starting to find his footing and where he best fits and how he can best make the guys around him shine. You know, I think stat-wise, it wasn't the most impressive game three, but in my opinion, I don't think they even have a chance in that second half without the first half that James had. Even though he was only, you know, at 12 points, that was a team best going into half. He had 5 assists. He was getting other guys involved. He's playing better defense than I actually knew that he could play, in my opinion. So, I think that there's more to give, and that's one of the reasons I'm trying to quell my excitement, because I know it is just the beginning of the postseason. But not just for this postseason, for the next couple of years, because I expect him to respect, and I expect these guys to just get better and better.
Then there's Tobias Harris. You talk about like trying to know what your role happens to be and to be a star in your role. They bring in Harden, Maxey's come on, yet it looks like Tobias Harris is playing at a really good level. What are you seeing when you're sitting courtside watching him?
I think he's been sensational. He's been a huge part of the first three games of this series, and I love the confidence and aggression he's playing with. You see him post sometimes on social media, actually pretty often over the last couple of weeks, the word vibration, and that's kind of his go-to. He meditates before games, and if the vibrations are right for Tobias, things can start going really well, and the vibrations are very strong right now here in Toronto.
Yeah.
But again, similar to what I was saying about Tyrese, it's the work he's put in. Great piece by my buddy Gina Mizell in the Philly Inquirer, I believe it posted today, just about the sacrifice he has made since James got here. We've seen how he's had to change his game. He wasn't a catch-and-shoot, three-point shooter. And every day before practice and every day after practice now, he's working on that shot because he knows he's going to get a lot of those with the way that James is playing beside him. The defense that he has played since about the middle of March when he decided, like, I'm shutting down DeMar DeRozan in Chicago, and the Sixers were able to complete that regular season sweep. I think that really showed him that if he puts his mind to it, he can play defense against some of the big offensive players in the league. So, yeah, I think he's been sensational, and I'm excited for him to shine even brighter, hopefully Saturday, and moving forward in this postseason.
It is one thing to watch Joel Embiid on TV. It's another to see him game in and game out. Now that you see him game in and game out, what is it like for you watching the artistry of Joel Embiid?
I mean, Steve, you know, from being in the booth, from calling games, from being courtside, I mean, there's multiple times every game where Ala and I just look at each other and say, are you kidding me? Did that just happen? That dude's 7'2", 280. Did he just do that again? I mean, obviously the most obvious case in point is the turnaround three to win the game the other night. He looked like a ballerina out there. He looked like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, whoever you want to. It's Reggie Miller. Like, insert the incredible guard of years past into that spot. And, actually, it's a 7-foot, almost 300-pound center that's pirouetting like a ballerina out behind the three-point line. So there's such a rhythm and a fluidity and a grace to the way that this giant human being moves. And then, at the same time, flip a switch, and he's ferociously dunking the ball, and you're afraid the rim might get ripped off, and we might have another delay like we did down in Dallas earlier in the season.
Right, yeah.
I think it's that combination, right, that he can be so graceful at times and then so violent at others that makes him such just an unbelievable player to watch. And like I said, to start that answer, Ala and I just feel so grateful because of what you said. It's a joy to get to watch him once a season, like I know so many Sixers fans do. To get paid to be there to talk about what he's doing, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, no question. There's another element to this, the matchup with Toronto. I mean, look, there's no more Leonard, there's no more Kyle Lowry. How tough is this in reality as a matchup for Toronto based on their current personnel?
Yeah, well, I think once Scottie Barnes went down in game one, it got a little bit easier. But, I mean, we all saw him during the regular season, even though we know the regular season and the postseason are very different beasts. But just because of their length and the fact that they're just a bunch of 6'9 dudes out there playing chaos defense, you don't know what they're going to throw at you. They're double and triple teaming Joel from every different angle all game long. It's a lot. So I think just the fact that they are so different than the majority of teams you face, right? Same thing can be in football when all of a sudden you're facing a triple option team. They might not have the same skill as you, but just because they're so different than what you're used to usually facing, I think it makes it tough. So I think that, again, is credit to the players for, especially in game one, because the Raptors know that they don't have as much talent as Embiid and Harden and Tyrese Maxey. So usually, like a lot of lesser teams do, they try to out-hustle you, out-physical you, right? That's why they're so good at offensive rebounds and stuff. I was so impressed in game one that the Sixers beat them at their own game. I didn't know if that this team had it in them to just work their tails off and fight for rebounds. That's not about skill. That's just you know what that is. That's who wants it more. So I think this has actually turned out not just because of the 3-0 lead, but I think just because it forced the guys to flip a switch early. And apologies for the truck that just is trying to follow me around Toronto backing up here. But just the fact that it really is about getting the guys so focused and playing hard right at the start of the postseason, which sometimes takes a little while. I think that it couldn't have actually been a better start to the postseason for the Sixers because, yes, the skill has needed to be there, but the guys knew that they just had to come in and fight and scratch and claw to get the lead in this series, so I think that's going to bode well for them moving forward.
And that's a great point on your part about the ability to beat them at their own game. That really sends a message to them like, oh, great, we're playing our game, and they're beating us at our game. One final question before I let you go, and that's about Doc. He guided the Celtics to the 2008 NBA title, so he's been down this road before. What can his presence just mean, especially with some of the younger players on the team?
Yeah, I think it means a lot. I mean, I think we saw at the end of the game the other night, Steve.
Yeah.
And he was right in front of Ala and me when he was sprinting down the court to call that timeout. I mean, that's just a veteran coach being there before. And he was calm, even though he was sprinting down the court to get that timeout. Little things like that make a huge difference. The fact that he was screaming at Tobias at the end of regulation after he missed the tap-in, after the Danny Green miss, and then kind of slacked on defense because he was frustrated with himself, and Doc just got into him. But Tobias has been with Doc in L.A., right? He knows the cred he has. And one thing that Doc said to us a little while ago about that Boston team all those years ago, and again, no team is an exact replica of another team, but he just brought up Rajon Rondo and how he was playing with a couple of superstars on that team, right? Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, guys who were surefire Hall of Famers, and he said, you know, Tyrese is kind of reminding me of Rajon, the fact that he has no fear, that he's getting into James and Joel, that he has the confidence now to say, I may be just starting my career in the league, but listen up, you guys. You've been here for a while and you haven't won yet. So if you want to win, we got to do this together. So I thought that was fascinating when he made that comparison a little earlier in the season. So I think it means a lot. I covered, as you know, Steve, a lot of championship teams in the Bay Area while I was working there. Being there and the veteran leadership of a Danny Green, who was very vocal on the bench at the end of that game the other night, that matters because when you get to this point in the season, all these guys care about is getting a ring, bringing that trophy back to Broad Street and having a parade. So it helps when you can look the guys who are screaming at you and say, well, I should probably listen because they've had that parade before.
Well, if you want to know when somebody's at the top of their game, they make signature calls. Kate made a signature call the other night, so one of many. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time you gave us today because I know you're busy. And phenomenal work all season, and keep it going.
Appreciate you, Steve, and apologies for the bad reception at first. I blame Toronto and just Canada in general.
Always.
Have a blast at the spring game tomorrow.
Great. Appreciate it, Kate. Thanks.